In the past couple months, there are several families within our parish that have experienced the loss of a loved one. In several cases, these were family men who were not nearly to the age that one would have been expecting them to die. And especially when someone with children still at home dies relatively young, it brings back more sharply what we all have observed and experienced probably at one time or another in our lives, which is that death at one time or another brings to the end everyone's earthly life. And that at that point, whatever we have materially accumulated is left behind, and it becomes an inheritance for our children, grandchildren, another family, those that we leave it to. This was something that Koheleth observed in the book of Ecclesiastes, which we heard in our first reading, as he noted, to another who has not labored over it, he must leave property. And Christ also spoke of this in his parable, where this landowner who had built new barns to house a great harvest had come to the time when it was time for him to die. And as God says to him in the parable, the things you have prepared, to whom will they belong? Now Christ, of course, was telling this parable because he was prompted, as we heard early in the gospel, by someone calling out from the crowd, "Teacher, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me." And so we observe, obtruding right in this gospel passage, a reality that we know, which is that often family members will fight over the inheritance that has been left to them. And one may try to grab something unjustly and not share it with the other as he should. Now, all of this is something that can be observed at the time of Koheleth, at the time of Christ, and now. But certain other things about it changed radically. For if we turn back to our first reading, the first reading is from the book of Ecclesiastes, in which the writer, calling himself Koheleth, is engaged in an examination of life to see what life is all about and what is the best way to live. And especially in the first couple chapters of this book, Koheleth is engaged in this search, trying out different things. And this, the great fact that is dominating his mind is this fact of death. For he sees that at the point that someone dies, everything that he has worked for comes to an end. And everything that he has achieved ends up being dissipated, so that no one is able to make a permanent change in the world, and everything simply goes back to being however it was before he attempted this change. And Koheleth's question is there any way to live that will overcome this? Is there any way, through great toil, through great effort, in one way or another, that we can overcome this vanity, this pointlessness, this uselessness that, for him, death causes in everything? And so in these first couple chapters, he describes this search, testing out. What if I try to accumulate pleasure, enjoyment, laughter, wine? What if I try to accumulate houses, vineyards, gardens, and parks? What if I try to accumulate slaves, cattle, sheep, silver and gold, singers, concubines? What if I try to accumulate wisdom, or if I simply live in a way characterized by foolishness? All of these things he describes, but he says they all come to an end with death. And so his own idea is then, don't work so hard. You know, enjoy the little things of life. For if you work hard, none of this ultimately gets past this barrier of death. That is the message of Koheleth. It is a message that is characterized by him not yet having received the revelation that there was life beyond death. And so without this knowledge, seeing death only as the final end, the final barrier, this was his conclusion. Now when we come to Christ and to his message, we then find enormous good news. For what Koheleth was looking for and could not find, Christ proclaimed, and indeed made the way in himself. Not exactly the way that Koheleth was looking for, because Koheleth probably would have liked death to have been swept away entirely. But instead, Christ made a way through death. As in his passion and death, he went through death to the resurrection. And he then opened the way for all of us to follow him through a life like his, a death like his, into a resurrection like his. This is incredible good news. For whereas Koheleth saw everything coming to an end and therefore nothing worth very much effort at all, through Christ's way, through Christ's resurrection, it turns out that some things are not useless. They do not come to an end. They are really worth putting effort into because they last forever. And here is something that is not vanity, that death does not stop. Something that really is worth our labor, our work, our time, our sweat, and our love. For these things really can persist. The question is, what are these things? For since Christ did not simply sweep death away, but made a way through it, still so many of these things do stop at death. And that includes all of those material possessions that we may have accumulated. As the saying goes, you can't take it with you. Well, all those material things you can't take with you. In Christ, there are some things you can. What are those things, and how do we live in a way that does not pour our efforts into what is still vanity, but rather pours it into what can last eternally? The fundamental answer for where we can put our effort, what follows Christ into eternity, is persons. C.S. Lewis put it well when he wrote, "It is immortals whom we joke with, work with, marry, snub, and exploit, immortal horrors or everlasting splendors." The material things, the jobs, the honors, the institutions, all of these things, even civilizations and governments and laws, all of these things come to an end. But the person-to-person interaction that we engage in all the time, wherever we are engaged in the work of building eternity. And yet, as Lewis points out, by saying both immortal horrors or everlasting splendors, there is both reward and punishment coming. Our lives are not vanity, but it turns out that they carry a great deal of importance, not only great promise, but also great risk. If we should not live in a way that is characterized by Christ, by heaven, by his life, then we may well be preparing ourselves for everlasting punishment. Or worse, we might be preparing others for it. And so far from the vanity that Koheleth saw, these areas become very, very important indeed, with eternal consequences. All of us are surely concerned with what will be the inheritance that we leave to our children. And we see thus that far more important than the material inheritance that we may leave will be the spiritual and the moral inheritance that we leave. the actions that we live out, actions of worship to God or of ignoring Him, actions of living out love and generosity to others, or of turning selfishly to ourselves, actions of being kind and generous to others, or pushing them aside. All of these things make us who we are, and also make others who they are. And there may be other consequences as well. Just a couple weeks ago, one particular website was hosting different writers who were writing on the topic, the future of Catholicism. And one young adult Catholic included one paragraph which was quite striking. As he said, "Our children and grandchildren are abandoning the faith because they perceive rightly that its demands are at fundamental variance with the lives we have prepared them to lead. That is, what the faith asks of us is contrary to the lives we lead and the lives we instruct our children to lead." He continues, "We have raised them to seek lives characterized by material comfort, sexual fulfillment, and freedom from any obligations that they have not personally chosen. Should it surprise us then that they fail to take seriously our claims to follow one, Christ, who embraced poverty, chastity, and obedience to the will of God?" Now, of course, this writer's words are not true of everyone. And indeed, his prediction about the future may not be true overall, or it may. His words serve as a mirror to examine ourselves in and ask, what moral and spiritual heritage are we living and leaving to our children and grandchildren? St. Paul, in today's reading, addresses this concern as he addresses early Christians like ourselves who had been baptized in Christ and who yet faced the challenge of living in that reality and not in other ways. And so he says, "Think of what is above, not of what is on earth. Seek to live out the life of ours that is hidden in Christ, the life that will be revealed in glory." And he goes through and lists instructions that can help us to know how to live in a way that prepares us for that future and that leaves a true spiritual and moral heritage for our children. And there are several things he lists, and let's just quickly walk through them. We heard read, first of all, here from his letter to the Colossians, "Put to death, then, the parts of you that are earthly: immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire." And so in these four words, he addresses an improper use of our sexuality, as well as of other physical appetites that we have. And he tells us, put away pornography, put away lustful imaginings, put away contraception, put away all sexual activity that is outside the marital bond of husband and wife. Put away these earthly things and live in a way that is characterized by the life of heaven. And he continues, put away also the greed that is idolatry. And so he urges us, as we use our material things, to use them wisely, not in a selfish way, not in a way that seeks to give ourselves pleasure or security, but rather in a way that are tools as we live out God's calling to us, especially the calling of spouses and parents, to truly encourage their spouses and children and grandchildren in the way of Christ, the way to heaven. And then St. Paul continues in a verse that is omitted from today's reading. You must put them all away: anger, fury, malice, slander, and obscene language out of your mouths. And so St. Paul recognizes how many ways we can use angry and cutting words to hurt other people. Directly to their face, behind their backs, in an email, in a text message. However we choose to do it. He says, leave that all behind. Don't use your words to hurt others. Use them to help them and to build them up. And St. Paul says, stop lying to one another. Since you have taken off the old self with its practices and have put on the new self, which is being renewed. So in these groups, he has told us what to take off and leave behind. And then, right after today's reading ends, he goes on and tells us what to put on, what to take up. He says, put on then as God's chosen ones, holy and beloved, heartfelt compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness and patience, bearing with one another and forgiving one another, as the Lord has forgiven you. And over all these put on love, that is, the bond of perfection. Now remember, in the view of Koheleth, seeing nothing beyond death, this might not have sounded like practical advice, for what would the use of it be? But to us who are in Christ and who see the way into eternity that he leads us on, this becomes supremely practical. A turning away from futility. A preparation for true life and the preparation of a true heritage, spiritual and moral, to leave to our children and grandchildren. And more than that, it becomes something else that Koheleth was searching for and never found. As St. Paul continues, let the peace of Christ control your hearts, the peace into which you were also called in one body. For this way also is the way of peace that everyone is searching for. How then to live in a way that is not vanity, but really counts for eternity? One Christian poet summed it up succinctly. Only one life, 'twill soon be past. Only what's done for Christ will last.